Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Welcome to another episode of the Inclusion First Podcast. My name is Carrie Sawyer. I am your host, and I am so excited that you're here. Now, today's guest is really, really special because if it wasn't for this person, I don't know that the Inclusion First Project, Institute, or podcast would be where they are at this time. So I am super happy to introduce you to my good friend and original co-host of the Inclusion First Project, all the webinars that we did. Her name is Kyle Moss, and I'm going to read you her bio, but if I had to describe Kyle in one word, it would be, I need two words, joyful energy, because she is one of the happiest people that I've ever met and is just this ball of like light and bright energy. And so I want to introduce you to our guest today, Kyle Moss. She is a joyful mindset coach, perfect, a breathwork facilitator, an author, and a self-proclaimed purveyor of joy. This is absolutely true. She provides vibrant mindset coaching, consulting services, and healing breathwork experiences for ambitious, curious, and open-minded people looking to live with more bold clarity, firm confidence, and daily contentment, no matter their circumstances. So you can see that Kyle is extremely positive and has a personal mission to bring that out in all the people that she's around. With more than two decades of global leadership and mentoring experiences, Kyle aims to infuse positive energy and enthusiasm everywhere she goes. And I would say that she exceeds all of the time at that. Having spoken to audiences of all sizes across four continents, Kyle loves working collaboratively with each client wherever they find themselves to find fiercely unique, joyful solutions to everyday challenges. When not coaching, Kyle can be found creating her signature Joy in a Jar body products, practicing at-home energy work, and adventuring gratefully through each day with her husband and two kiddos in San Diego, California. Please join me in welcoming my amazing friend and the original co-host of the Inclusion First Project, Kyle Moss. Kyle, I am so happy that you are here today with us.
I'm so excited to be here, Carrie. I think we'll talk a little bit about our backstory, but any chance that I get to connect with you and have a conversation like this is just a happy day.
Yay. So Kyle is my partner in crime for the Inclusion First Project at like period, the end. Like without her, I mean, I don't know if this thing would have happened. So thank you for being on this journey with me. And I mean, honestly, when we started the Inclusion First Project, like that idea, like to do something, we didn't know what it was, but to do something, came from you and a friend of ours, Shelby, well, your sister-in-law, Shelby, saying, hey, you know, you guys are in diversity, like you should do something, right? And this is like, you know, in the middle of last summer. And I was having a day, honestly. It was after George Floyd, and I was just not feeling well emotionally. And it was just taking its toll. And I was like, I cannot deal with any of this right now. I need a break. I need a rest. I need a TV timeout. And then the next day, I had all these ideas, because even though I wasn't physically thinking about it, like my subconscious like was like, oh, that's a great idea. What could we do? And that's how the idea of, you know, just answering questions was born. And fast forward almost a year, here we are. Kyle, I would love for you to tell our audience like a little bit about you as we get into this conversation. Now, spoiler alert, Kyle is a joy consultant, which is, I mean, it has to be one of like the best, coolest jobs that exists, that before you started doing it, I had no idea that it did exist. And I am so in love with the idea of it and the manifestation that happens through you and bringing more joy in the world. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Kyle?
Yes. For those of you listening, I wish you could see my face because I'm just smiling as largely as possible listening to Carrie talk about and be so humble. I really have not much to do with her amazing accomplishments over the last year. Like, please do not. So anyways, yeah, Carrie, you are fantastic. Yes, I loved being like a half of a seedling at a year or so ago. When we watched you launch into this incredible initiative and connecting people with the questions, right? The curiosity that it takes to really approach a subject like anti-racism. So number one, if you're listening at home or wherever you are, know that I am laughing at Carrie because she is so beautifully humble and it's so wonderful to watch play out on a screen. So that's number one. Number two, yes, I love that you called me a joy consultant. I call myself a purveyor of joy, right? Like I deal in joy because why not? And I love that you said I know it exists because I don't think it does exist. It is something I created because I think we were born to create our own way in this world. And that's exactly what I get to do with my coaching clients. So technically I call myself, if you need like a real title, a joyful mindset coach, right? So I am how do you cultivate, curate, and elevate your thinking towards just a little more joy? My exact mission, like if you really are like that person, like I need your elevator pitch, teach and encourage people to elevate their thinking towards just a little more joy every single day, right? Like who doesn't want just a little more joy every single day? So that's what I get to do. And you know this, Carrie, but if you're listening and you're like, what does that mean? What does it look like? I am a mindset coach, kind of like a life coach, where I work one-on-one with people to cultivate and create a plan. Like I call it usually adventure planning. My new word is joy formation. But I also offer group coaching and lots of other fun things. So that's a little bit about what I'm doing.
That's awesome, Kyle. Thank you so much for sharing. So what do you think that it means to be an activist in 2021? And do you consider yourself to be one?
I love this question because it makes me pause and in the best of ways challenge my definition of what an activist is and whether or not I am incorporating that in my life, right? So you know this about me, Carrie, but I very specifically was an activist in my mid-20s because I took time out of my career, right, to work for a nonprofit, live in a van, travel around the country, speaking about a specific issue and having a very specific call to action, right? So that to me, I was like, yeah, I was an activist at that period of time. So I think what happens many times is we get caught up in that one definition. Mm-hmm. And because active is the word in it, it makes us think like, well, what am I actively doing, right, to incorporate little bits of activism maybe into my life in these days. And so my long-winded answer to this question is that I do believe that I am an ongoing activist. And the way that I do it though, just looks different than maybe the traditional definition, right? The way that I practice activism is in being intentional with my children, right? Like the messages that they hear at home, the ways that we love our community and our friends and our family and our sphere of influence, I think those little bits of activism are actually, to me, and maybe this is just my stage of life as a wife and a mom of two young kids, but I think that that is our activism, is it the little ways that we love our community and our sphere of influence. So with that new definition, yes, that's what I think I am doing in terms of activism. And I do believe that yes, I'm an activist in that way.
I love that. And thank you so much for sharing it. And I really think that, you know, this project is helping us to explore like the definition of activism and where different people are coming into it and really expand it. Like that's really our ultimate goal, is to expand it to show that activism looks different for different people. Really to start to be aware of what those things are, because we want to build those skills and expand it, even if we're just expanding it to do more or have a bigger impact or be a model for those people around us, right? That's one way that expansion happens as well, is showing up in a certain way that other people see and then start to emulate. I think that's one of actually our biggest opportunities for activism to create a positive impact in this world.
I agree. And I feel like that helps me also to continue redefining what activism looks like at this stage in my life, because I was thinking as you were talking, every conversation I enter into is an opportunity to be an activist if I'm ready and aware and intentional. Even just stopping a weird joke that people would make and going like, hey, like, let's think about that, right? Like, so even being that person and lovingly disrupting the thoughts or the behaviors of others around you, I feel like those are ways that you can be an activist too. And those are the ways that I am able to do that in my life, like, again, my stage of life. So absolutely.
Awesome. Beautiful. So Kyle, I would love for you to talk to us a little bit about the change that you are creating in the world and how you are showing up. You talked a little bit about, you know, just a couple examples, and even with your kids as well, but give us a little more of the story around how you're showing up as an activist, as an anti-racist in your world. And that can be at home, through your work, in your community, like your place of faith, like any and everywhere is fair game for storytelling today.
I love it. So, you know me, I could tell 17 different stories about this. So the first one that popped into mind though is, so I'm mixed ethnically, right? I've got light skin, but I just recently found out, I don't know if I told you this, maybe I did, but when I did my 23andMe, I knew I was quarter Jamaican. My mom's half black, half white. And so the Jamaican part of us is actually 22% Nigerian.
Oh, wow.
I know. And so that's fantastic, right? So I found out I was actually 47% British, which we were like, whoa, I've been living thinking I was German this whole time. We were like hardly German at all. And then I'm part Lebanese Syrian. So my grandma grew up in Lebanon. I actually grew up in a Syrian orphanage, the whole thing. So anyway, so I'm very mixed, right? I've got light skin though. So people can kind of, they don't know. My whole life, people have said like, oh, like what a great tan you have. Like you know, so that's been the story that my mom and my family, and it's like, oh, and you know, you're like, I don't know how to respond to that, but you just respond in love. Like, thanks. Yeah. This is my skin. So with that said, I think the power is in that response, right? The power is in that response. I can go, oh my gosh, what a racist comment. And I can get angry and upset every time I hear someone telling me I have tan, beautiful skin. Or, right, I can go, thank you. And I can somehow see if there's a way to lovingly explain a little bit to that person, right? Situational awareness, depending on how much time you've got. But I've learned that even more because I married, my husband is half black, half white. So our kids are very mixed as well, right? So racism is just, it's on the surface of everything we do. It's not an easy thing because we don't fit, quote unquote, like if you're listening, obviously you can't see me, I'm doing air quotes, but we don't fit the box, right? We've never checked one box, any of us. And now our kids are even mixed, right? So having these conversations with them is the best way to figure out like, what does activism look like as we grow and learn and shape our worlds together, right? And to us, it's like, okay, it's the little things. People we're surrounded by have questions. And instead of stopping them at those questions or saying that's not a safe space or, right, like just being offended by those questions, I try to explore like, okay, where is my ability to help in this situation, right? Like question because we look different or we have a different kind of approach to life. So how can I give them a little bit more instead of shutting them down and like pushing them away? I don't know. Like, I think it's just, we're so afraid these days, but our family has taken it upon ourselves to say, we're going to respond in love, right? We're going to respond with resources when we can, right? And a perfect example is my 7-year-old daughter. She's mixed again. She's got darker skin than me. And people are always wondering, always commenting on our physical appearance. And so race to her has become very much the look, right? Like, okay, look different. You know, she learned in school about slavery. So she was like, oh, would I have been a slave? Like, it was a heavy thing. So a big thing is responding in love, giving resources when we can, and just being open to any conversation that comes across our plates. I don't even remember where the question started here, Carrie. I just started talking.
No, this
is great. Bring me in when you need to here.
magic happens in the quote unquote ramble. There's no ramble about
it. It's a ramble.
We're storytelling. So
yeah. So but those are some of the stories, right? Of how we are so mixed, and racism is, it's not a choice to like talk about it or not talk about it for us, right? It's, I have a blonde haired, blue eyed child, and I have a dark skinned, brown hair, brown skin, like I have both in my house, right? So we're a walking example of the fact that we can't ignore racism, right? It's here, we live it, we breathe it. So I think, yeah, our response has been, and it's been so fantastic to go, like, how do we love people by inviting them into a safe space and a safe conversation, by giving them resources and just like an ability to ask questions, just like you're doing with everything that you do.
I would love to hear more about what was that conversation like with your daughter when she asked mommy, would I have been a slave? Like, I mean, I'm sure you're just like making lunch or helping her with her homework. And then all of a sudden, like, boom, here we are. You're like, oh,
you're exactly right. Yeah, you're exactly right. It was a dinner time conversation, and it wasn't even like we're all sitting at the table and just like, it was like a question. It was like in the part of dinner where we're wrapping it up. The littlest one was like, you know, he takes 2 hours to eat like 5 bites. So he's still sitting there alone and we're kind of cleaning around him. And so, gosh, I wish I could remember a little bit more clearly, but my husband and I definitely exchanged a look, right? It was that look of, whoa, she's only 6. We hadn't prepared ourselves for this, right? So that was a big thing. That was a big learning for us was, okay, how do we get ahead of these conversations? Mm-hmm. And not even in like talking to her all the time about it. Cause I think, you know, the more you talk about something, the more it becomes an issue at times, especially for kids. But it was just like, oh, hey, we need to have some of these conversations. He and I, like, we need to talk about this a little bit more just to be ready for when, you know, those questions come. Right. And so I heard this analogy too, this was really helpful, even in looking back at how we handled the conversation, but parents, right? Like, it means protector, basically. And someone was telling me like, oh, in parenting, we've got to decide when the suitcase, like, kids are on a journey, right? They're on a journey. We're like their guide, right? On this journey of life. There are suitcases that sometimes I need to carry for them. And when they're ready, they might be able to carry them themselves and even unpack them, right. Right? But sometimes the suitcase is just too heavy and it's not ready to be unpacked. You can look at it, right? And so it's kind of knowing where your kids are. So I was really glad in this conversation with my daughter at 6 years old, when she heard about slavery kind of for the first time, it was, hey, she's 6 years old. She's not ready for this really detailed explanation of what slavery was about and how it's persisted and what it looked like and who was involved. Like, she's not ready for all of those details. That's a suitcase that I'm going to continue to carry for her and be ready to unpack it when she is prepared. But at this stage of the game, it was just an easy conversation. Like, okay, no, I'm going to take that back. Not easy. It was just a simpler conversation than I think my husband and I's exchanged glance may have thought. Right? Like, we exchanged a glance like, where's this coming from? But in fact, it was really a conversation of just like, hey, someone said this in class. And I was like, oh, okay, Keegan. Her name is Keegan. How did you feel about that? Right? It was asking her the questions rather than giving her a bunch of information. Mm. It was really going, okay, Keegan, what did you think about that? How did they describe it to you? Right? Like, what else was said? Right? What did you walk away thinking? So it was really going, let's just ask questions of her so that we give her the space to navigate her own thinking about what this topic might entail. Right? So now we've started to touch on it, and it's come up a few other times. And again, we can go, oh, we've got a little more space to stretch out and to, we have room. right? To unpack it a little bit. So yeah, it was really that type of conversation. It was like, hey, let's just get out of her mind what she's thinking. And then reaffirm her. We are strong reaffirmers in this household that you are beautiful. And we are believers that God made you exactly who you are meant to be. And that's all that matters at the end of the day. This is a shell. We call our bodies just vessels of love, right? Like this is a vessel of love. Like who knows why it looks a certain way, right? It just does. And, you know, it's going to cause some issues and it's going to force people to look at you differently, maybe treat you differently at times. But we're a vessel of love, so we respond out of that. So that was a lot more rambling, but that was the conversation, which was very, very, again, ill-prepared.
No, this is perfect. It's beautiful. I mean, while I love that, instead of jumping in to fill the void, you let her thoughts percolate and her experience come out. Because in that moment, like your reaction is teaching her about herself, about what she heard, and, you know, the initial panic that you then put to the side, you put that suitcase to the side to allow something else to emerge that was really authentic from Keegan and from Keegan's experience and questions maybe that she had about what was said and what she learned. I think that's so interesting. I am not a parent. And so I love learning about the process of parenting and how you're navigating these things like on the fly and how in your style and approach and tactics as a parent, you can well embody anti-racist thoughts and beliefs and actions, right? And, you know, I love what you said about being a family that affirms and affirmation being such a huge part of the culture that you are creating in and for your family and letting her know that she is loved and that she is beautiful and she is all the things. She is perfect, which is true. I mean, that is so true. And being able to instill that in a child as a foundation so that when she comes up against these other messages, those can bounce off, right? And I think it's so important. And being aware and intentional, and I'm sure that, you know, that's what parents are out there in this world trying to do. But it's hard. It's hard you're not there half the time, more than half the time. What are these messages that are going in? Which ones are bouncing off? Which ones do you get to hear about and which ones don't you? So how do you set this beautiful foundation and continue to affirm consistently, constantly to try to, I mean, it's almost like doing damage control, but you have no idea what the damage is.
It's so true. And I think you're right. And the intentionality is where it comes in for anyone, right? So at the end of the day, we practice like putting our kids to bed and re-asking those questions. Like, hey, how are you feeling? I know we had a conversation about X, Y, Z earlier today. Like, how are you feeling now? Right? Or what are you thinking about as you go to sleep? And then praying over them, right? Like if everyone were to take an intentional amount of just minutes every night when they went to bed to check in with themselves and just say like, hey, maybe you did experience something that felt like a racist comment or situation or experience. Like maybe you did in one way or the other. Maybe you behaved in a way that you felt like, whoa, if I really stop and think about that, maybe that was a biased way of behaving, right? Like if we all took a few minutes at night and like you said, like reaffirmed ourselves, checked in with ourselves, just evaluated what just took place and then set an intention over the day that was to come. Like, what a beautiful practice, right? I don't know. And like, again, that's the way that I seed it in my children, because like you said, when they go out into the world, whatever situations they encounter, the prayer, the hope, the desire is that whatever we're feeding them when we are with them, that reflects off of them and into the lives of others. And in that way, that's how we are activists, right? So I don't know. What do I know? But that's what we do.
I think it's a beautiful practice. And your kids are, I mean, they're not only adorable, but very, very loving. I remember the first time that I met Keegan, she like ran up and gave me a hug. And I'm like, I don't even know this little girl. She is fearless. She just hugged this stranger. And I love her so much because I needed that hug. I needed that love at that exact moment. So whatever you're doing is working.
Whatever you're doing is today, working. Who knows? You have to adapt every day.
Well, yeah, there's that. So Kyle, this work, as we've, you know, already touched on in so many different ways, it can be difficult. It can be trying. What is it that keeps you inspired? What keeps you moving forward in those moments when things get tough?
That's a good question. I think it changes. I think it changes from day to day. A big practice of mine is writing down celebratory wins, big, small, in between, because I think we all pretend as if we'll remember and we'll be able to draw on our experiences when we need them. But in fact, if we haven't written them down and documented them, it's really difficult when you're in those moments of trial or struggle or frustration to recall what you need as energy and as evidence that you've been here before and you can do it again. So that's a big practice of mine, both personally and in my coaching, right? Is writing down the things that you're proud of, right? Like if, when it comes to activism, reminding yourself the things that you have done and the wins that you've had along the way, because when you're in moments of anxiety or stress or frustration or whatever it is, right? Fill in the blank of whatever challenge or trouble comes your way, because it's not if, right? I know this. It's not if we experience moments of uninspiration. What's the word there? What's the opposite of it? Disinspiration? I know that's not a word.
I don't even know.
It shouldn't have an opposite. That's fine. But you know what I'm saying? When you're in those moments where you're just exhausted and you've run out of fuel and you're like, how do I keep fighting this fight, basically? That's the time to draw on all of the evidence that you have in your past. And if you don't have those things written down, it's really easy to forget and to spiral into that negativity. So one of the things that motivates me a lot is the example of my grandma and my grandpa. My grandma was, I could go on and on. I think we've talked about this before, Carrie, but basically my grandma was from Canada, and my grandpa, who was from Jamaica, but had moved to New York. And so they got married. There's lots of their story, but to spare you the details, they were a beautiful couple. They got married, had six kids. My grandpa passed when the sixth kid was months old, maybe 2 or 3 months old.
Oh, wow.
So my grandma's here, this white lady with no family support. And she's now got six mixed kids in the 60s. Yeah. So I use her story as a lot of inspiration when I get to places where I think racism is so frustrating that I want to put my head in the sand. I just think of my grandma, where she, in a beautiful way, put her blinders on, fell in love, and just said, okay, this is life. People can look, whatever, right? Like, she just kind of said, like, this is life. I'm either living it and investing and enjoying what I've got in front of me, what we've created, right? And this, again, it's a perfect example of like worlds coming together, black and white. Or I can let the negativity and the frustration and the problems and all of things just cover me up, right? But she just, I don't know, she inspires me in the fact that she's like, meh. Like, moving on, not interesting to talk about, you know, like what we think. And I'm not saying she's like naive, she's not ignorant. She's just chosen a different, elevated way of thinking about it. Right? She's like, yeah, we can get lost in those details, or we can talk about what makes us wonderfully unique and exotic and beautiful and embrace it and love it and move the heck on. So I love that. She definitely inspires me in those moments when I go like, crap, what do I say to my kids? Right? Like when I get lost in those moments, maybe you're listening and you've been lost in these moments when you're like, what about 5 years from now, 10 years from now? What is it going to look like? Right? What will change? What's going to happen? Right? Instead of going down that spiral, I stop and I'm like, I have this moment. Right? I think about my grandma and the craziness that she's had to have experienced over the last 90 years, right? So that's definitely one of the go-tos when I get uninspired or overwhelmed with the thought of what racism could look like, is I get inspired by my grandma and her story, for sure.
That's beautiful. I love it. And as you were talking, I feel like activism and resistance can sometimes be just existing and doing the thing that you want to do, love to do, need to do. Perfect example, your grandma, single mother, 6 mixed kids, her existing at all is a form of activism. Like, period. Yeah. The end. Yeah. Your beautifully blended family existing and doing what you're doing, an act of resistance. It's activism. Even the work that you're doing, Kyle, like, you know, you're a purveyor of joy, like existing at all in your skin, who you are, doing what you're doing. It's like it's like you're a triple threat of like resistance and activism, just by being who you are and following your heart and the love inside of you. And I think that needs to be acknowledged and called out, to you specifically is what I'm getting right now, but also to the people who are listening. Like, you existing and following your passion, you, whatever you look like, whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever your circumstance being and going through what you've been through, you are an act of resistance, an act of activism, mm-hmm. and you have to keep going because you're needed. People need to see you in this world because from you, they will take inspiration and know that whatever crazy thing they're thinking is possible too, you know? Mm-hmm.
I love it. Thank you, Carrie. That's fantastic to hear out loud. Thank you.
Yeah. In doing this work and recognizing what I'm now calling social justice superheroes, I'm like, you're a social justice superhero just for being right where you are, because that's hard and you are paving the way or trying to pull through a small line that someone else has thrown back to you. Like, it's not easy being in this skin, you know, sometimes, whoever you are. So, you know, the message is just keep going. Keep going and keep changing the world for the better, for sure.
Yeah, I love that. Keep breathing. You know, I think this world could do with a deep breath before we respond.
Yes, please.
Right? A deep breath. And there's a huge difference. I know you and I have talked about it before, but right? Reactions versus responses, right? You react if you don't take a deep breath. You react and it can be terrible. But if you take a deep breath, you get to choose your response in any situation, right? Like, I know we're talking about activism and anti-racism. I'm talking any situation, but especially when it comes to kind of the climate that we are in with the anti-racism conversation ongoing, especially in the US. If you can take a deep breath and start to choose your responses, I think so much more would be done out of love and intentionality. Thinking about reaction versus response has been a big thing. Obviously, you know, Carrie, I am a breathwork facilitator and I incorporate breathwork into all that I do. And it's meant as a healing modality. And so imagine we've got this power of healing within every single one of us. And so when you get frustrated, when you see something racist, when you hear something racist, when you experience something racist, and yet you're still on this path of trying to be an anti-racist and not sure what it looks like in the moment, take a deep breath. Take a deep breath and choose your response, because I'm pretty sure that's where the magic is. That's where it lives. So.
I love it, Kyle. I had like a final question, but you just answered it right there. That's the advice, people, to take wherever you are on your path, thinking about stepping in to this work. When you're in the work, take the breath, be intentional, tap into that power for sure. For sure. For sure. Kyle, this was amazing, as I knew it would be. Where can people find you? Where can they learn more about the incredible things that you're doing and how you're walking in this world?
I love that question. The best place to find me is on Facebook. So I run a group. I convene a powerful group of friends, I will call everyone, our community, called Just a Little More Joy. So on Facebook, search Just a Little More Joy. Or even if you don't have Facebook, I know some people don't, you can still find it and find my information. So Kyle Moss, Joyful Mindset Coach, and Just a Little More Joy.
Awesome, Kyle. Thank you so much for taking time to be here today and for sharing your wisdom, your love, and your joy with us all.
You're so welcome. And I will make one last plug, Carrie.
Please.
I almost forgot, but I have to talk about it. I have a book that people can get for free, a digital copy of a book called Awakening Your Joy.
There you go.
So if you haven't found me online, or if you're looking, like, that's the best place. So come to the Facebook group and you can find it. But certainly look for that. And maybe I can even share with your listeners
absolutely
a free link to that digital copy.
We will drop it in the show notes for sure.
Woohoo!
Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, Carrie. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.